你不能找路径。
You know what drives me crazy? I mean really crazy. Not having fast internet. Can you believe at my house I cannot get internet fast enough to stream Netflix? Seriously, I cannot watch Netflix. And it makes me lose my mind a little bit. I've always had this sense of control over my entertainment choices until suddenly my only option is Dish Network Cable. No Netflix, no Hulu, no Amazon Prime, not even YouTube. It seems silly. But I live in a world, and I think it's quite probable you live in the same world, where we literally feel entitled to good internet, good data on our phones, and fast enough Wi-Fi in our homes to watch Netflix. Says who? My internet would have been fine 5 years ago, but today, unacceptable. I wish and may have even investigated ways to break my lease in order to move somewhere where I can get faster internet service. No joke. Apparently, that's not part of the lease agreement, but one of my side jobs is as an online bookkeeper, and I cannot even use QuickBooks Online at my house. So I'm there at Starbucks, working again, mad. But I live in Florida, and a rainstorm pops up out of nowhere, and lightning strikes the pole directly next to the coffee shop, and now I can't use the Wi-Fi there, and they kick everyone out, and I was on a video conference call with a client. He sent me a screenshot of how my face froze in the video when the power went down. Not pretty, and super inconvenient. It makes me feel as if I don't have control. Maybe that's silly, but to me, it's a real thing. It's a basic need, in that I rely on internet to provide for my family. We have this deep and undeniable sense that we must be able to provide for our family. It's innate. And when it's challenged, we feel a little out of control and frantic. I guess that's just how nature has evolved us. But internet? How did it get caught up in the fold? It seems silly when I pull back and look at the bigger picture. A feeling of lack of control in my life is oftentimes directly related to not wrapping my arms around the big picture or being laser-focused on just one little thing or things and blowing them way out of proportion. Why do we want control? Can we control the universe, the weather, other people, even ourselves sometimes? Of course not. Let's talk about, for a second, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That little pyramid that's structured in a way where each level is dependent on the one below it for the stability and striving to attain the next level of success as a human being. On the bottom are our physiological needs. You know, our health, food, and sleep. And then once we are breathing, eating, and sleeping beings, we move on to safety. We aren't running for our lives from wolves or zombies. We have some consistency. We know we aren't going to die of hunger or be eaten in our sleep tonight. And from there, we as humans created and built community and tradition even, and family and friend systems to give us a sense of belonging. Belonging to a group is important because it makes us feel a sense of love and affection for others of our group. And then once we feel like we know all of the prior things are secure, we begin to naturally seek out ways to fuel and reinforce our self-esteem. We seek praise from those in our community, or at least our peers and our family. It's ingrained. We deeply desire a solid attaboy. We seek feeling accomplishment and creativity in some area of our life. We need it for our self-esteem. When we nail it and feel filled up in that capacity, we look within instead of around for that measure of worth and value. From that acknowledgement of worth, we derive some inner power. We muster the strength to forge ahead, to continue on a path of self-discovery, self-mastery, and eventually self-actualization. There are a number of life experiences that can catapult a person into a self-actualization phase of their lives. But if you want to do it on your own, here are some of the musts that you need to make part of your everyday to-do list. How about avoiding pretense, game playing, and being honest? Listening to your own feelings, in evaluating experiences instead of the voice of tradition or authority or the majority. And how about taking responsibility and working hard? Because that's what you can do. How about identifying your defenses and having the courage to give them up? This is the ultimate goal in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, is to become a self-actualized person. So what exactly is a self-actualized person? I mean, ugh. Well, how about this? They understand and perceive reality efficiently and can tolerate uncertainty. They can look at life objectively. They are able to have deep appreciation of the basic life experience. They need and even value privacy. They have strong moral and ethical standards, and they have deep, satisfying personal relationships with a few people, not just 5,000 Facebook friends. Okay, so now that we've talked about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, why don't we talk about control? We don't actually need control, we just need a sense of control. That way we can feel trust. It's comfortable. We frantically seek ways and reasons to validate our perceived control. We pull hard on the reins, we micromanage, we speak as if we are the given ruler of all things. But actually, control is an illusion. I said it. Control is an illusion. I love having a sense of control. I'm convinced that I can master my body, I can master my thought life, I can master my emotions, I can master and expand my ability to tolerate pain. I can literally be the ringmaster of my own circus and the author of my own book. So that means I have control, right? Not really. What I have is the perception of control, the illusion of control. And from an evolutionary standpoint, if we are in control of our environment, then we will have a far better chance of survival. Our deep subconscious mind gives us strong biochemical prods when we face some kind of danger, enter the fight or flight reaction. Other needs that lead us to a sense of control are a sense of certainty, completion of outstanding things so we don't have to worry about them, understanding how things work, being able to predict what will happen, and that people, including ourselves, are consistent. Let's talk about consistency. 2 days ago, I could have felt helplessly in love. Motivated, ready to take over the world. And then yesterday, terrified. And today, inept, incapable of anything except for behaving appropriately. Feelings are silly. They ebb and flow. At times I felt bubbling over with thrill, and others numb and mute. Why do we oscillate? Is it the pursuit of the perception of control? You know what I find super interesting is the way we are trained. I think both males and females to try and control the other sex. We are shown ways that seem to work, and then we practice them. And if they appear to be successful, we continue to exhibit those same characteristics. It's like conditioning. So we think we have control, but really all we've found is someone whose conditioning is compatible with our own. And we're talking about control here. If you think control lies in being unique to your lover, that you're going to become or remain unique in your mannerisms, your sexual prowess, or some superficial outward way, you're foolish. Is there only one kind of man that gave you an orgasm? No, of course not. Do you have a type? Yes, I bet you do. But just because you can sleep with him and he can get you off, that doesn't mean you want to marry him, right? Okay. The power and control comes from knowing that there are thousands of potential mates, whether you are a man or a woman. Anyone you meet comes with their own set of hiccups, idiosyncrasies, and tics. And understanding that since there are many fish in the sea and conquests that could be fought and won, you better bring a high-value asset to the table in your pursuit of a lasting love. Cute, hot, smart, funny, successful, alone are not enough. You need to cultivate being a person of high value. High value equals self-respect. Period. Not self-adoration. That's just narcissism. Stephen Hussey and Matthew Hussey write a relationship blog for women. Stephen has this concept about the three boxes men put women in. Box one is a woman he will sleep with, only sleep with. She's hot. And there's enough chemistry for lust, but that's about it. Box two is a cool girl. He will introduce you to his friends. There's chemistry in bed, and she's good company, fun to hang out with, easy or intelligent conversationalist, you know, able to charm his friends. Not embarrassing or nasty or bitchy in public, good-natured and has a sense of humor, but still, he's not settling down with her. He's not taking her home to meet the parents. Box three is a high-value woman. And the list here looks a little bit like the list of a person who has achieved self-actualization. This woman has a strong sense of purpose and direction in life. She's independent, has interests and pursuits that give her fulfillment, a commitment to growth and ability to improve, looking after her health and treating her body with respect, strong standards for how you should be treated and what you stand by, a feeling of self-worth and internal validation because it's unattractive to need constant reassurance, sexual confidence and ability to be adventurous in bed, and the ability to turn him on emotionally and sexually, an absence of neediness, a willingness to love him for who he is and encourage him, and a lifestyle that the woman loves living, and good relationships with people around her. And most importantly, no drama, just authenticity and genuine femininity. That list is what it takes to be unique to a man. Being unique is about being fully and 100% okay with who you are as a woman. Guys, do you disagree? But we get so caught up in trying to change the other person, we lose sight of who we are. Enmeshed, and it's just not healthy. It doesn't matter if you're trying to change them to suit your requirements or trying to change yourself so that they won't leave you. Both extremes are related to a goal that is entirely out of your control. Because not only are we incapable of really controlling anyone else, we will never be perfect. They will never be perfect. And life will never be perfect. Perfect. What a shitty word. It's a delusion. Worse than control. It's a trap, a moving target. And once attained, it's immediately retracted. If you're trying to be perfect for someone else, then you will sacrifice yourself to the relationship. And at that point, the relationship becomes worthless. Aim for growth. Aim for heightened personal standards. Aim for progress. Aim for two whole people. And then do that thing called a relationship. Just showing up is not enough. It's a start. In relationships, really good relationships, the No Child Left Behind concept does not apply. The world, at least in our culture, is bound in an obsession to be special, that every single person should be celebrated for their specialness, which feels a lot less like uniqueness and more like pacification. Everyone gets a trophy just for participating. And as a woman, I have to admit, we seem to think that we are entitled to being treated a particular way. But are you? Do you deserve a trophy just for showing up to practice? Do you think that those that sweat and work their asses off are equal to you? Because you bought a uniform, you clocked in at work, you collected a paycheck, that makes you equal to the guy or girl next to you who always goes the extra mile? Ugh. My daughter played one season of Little League, and at the end there was a huge ceremony. The kids that played really well got a bigger trophy. And every single player, got a participation trophy. She didn't even have to work for it. Not really. She just got in the car and was dropped off at practice. She wasn't dedicated to practicing at home or even to try again, working harder in the following year, because she'd already won the prize. And she had that stupid plastic little trophy for years. My point is this. Working for something you want adds value to it. This year I celebrated the United States Day of Freedom alone, in a sort of celebration of my own freedom, to do whatever I wanted. Out of that came a classic New York cheesecake, candied bourbon peaches, and Meyer lemon curd, a lot of self-reflection, and some writing. Actually, not as much writing as I had planned for, but good quality time spent in the kitchen was a fair trade. One of the things I think we consider interconnected is control and freedom, but they're not related. We have freedom in so many ways and none in others. You buy what's available to you, or you grow it yourself. We choose what job we want, but only within the parameters of qualification and availability. We hang out with whomever we choose, but allow our need to be accompanied to choose poorly out of desperation or an inability to be alone that feeds on our insecurities. We think we choose these things, but really, we are impassive and avoid the hard choices in order to go easy through our days. I found myself stuck in small talk the other day. It was just the whole, hey, how are you? What are you doing for the holiday weekend? And at the end of it, I realized what a waste of 7 minutes. There's nothing wrong with making nice with people. And I'm pretty sure I could have done that with a smile and a wave or a nod. Did I need to? I mean, really need to take time out of my day to listen to whatever was going on in their life? Did I really care? And I know for sure they didn't care what I had to say. When I talked about what my daughter was up to, I saw their eyes roll back in their head a little. I mean, obviously, I was putting more energy into the conversation than they were. They were focused on the stuff that is important to them. And I was trying to behave like a girl should, to make sure everyone felt warm and fuzzy, to bring a sense of care and genuine interest to the conversation. And that is exactly why I think I need to choose more wisely whom I share that energy and time with. Since I can't actually control who I come into contact with throughout the day, I better, capital B, better, make sure I understand how I want to exchange that time and energy with them. Should we be nice? Probably. But remember, you have two exceptional commodities at your immediate disposal, and neither are unlimited. Your time and your energy. That's it. That's what you have to build with. Okay, I realize there are converging and counter ideas here. Are we free? Do we have control? Can we change our brain? Am I the ringmaster of my circus? The leader of my band? Well, those are fantastic questions. What does free mean to you? What kind of control do you seek? All right, no soapbox today, but we do always have control of our choices. I was watching the end of Game of Thrones season 6, so no spoilers, please. And Stannis Baratheon is talking to his daughter about how great leaders sometimes have to make very hard choices. He asked her what she would do if she had to make a very hard choice. She gently exclaims she wouldn't choose. And he says, sometimes a person has to choose. If a man knows what he is and remains true to himself, the choice is no choice at all. He must fulfill his destiny and become who he was meant to be. An actually terrible thing to quote if you saw the episode, but I like it. We want control, and basically control is cool. It's not evil unless it's an obsession, unless it's a compulsion. But life, the universe, and all of its people, they're not ours to control. In Stoicism, the fundamental idea is that the only thing I can control is my mind, my attitudes, my obsessions, and my perceptions. Stoicism is a philosophy, and it's hinged on pain and hardship being the touchstone of growth and the human condition. Stoicism, by definition, is the endurance of pain or hardship without display of feelings and without complaint. Eek! No complaint, that's a challenge. but it resonates with me. It speaks to my desire to cultivate fortitude, tolerance, and even acceptance, and calls me to forge a depth of endurance that our culture doesn't really teach. I like to think that I'm free thinking, but it comes at a cost. What is the cost that you pay for your freedom? Control is very much a part of our lives. It's embedded in the little things, the big things, and all of the in-between things. Did you know that rituals are driven by a need for control? They give us a sense of familiarity, of consistency, and a framework to design our lives around. They give us this feeling that the world is okay, that everything will continue indefinitely the way we feel it should, and it's comforting. I like rituals. I like doing the things that made me feel good, contented, regularly. It makes me feel safe, and when things suddenly change, it's disconcerting. We are creatures of habit, of routine. It gives us comfort when we know what to expect. We rely on constancy to free up our energy to be creative or learn new skills and meet new challenges. I like thinking I have control, but I must balance that compulsion with a little grace, knowing that the journey is unknown. The destination might not look like it did in the brochure, and the less I create struggle where there really is none, the less turbulence I will find on that flight. You know the sayings, best laid plans, any given Sunday? How about Murphy's Law? Or don't count your chickens before they hatch, or the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Those quotes, we say them, post them, and remember them because of our own realization that some aspects of life are completely out of our control, often unpredictable, and that it's totally okay. You are not your job. You are not the car you drive. You are not the contents of your wallet. Thank you for that, Fight Club. That movie came out in 1999. I watched it at least 10 times over the next few years, and I got it. I totally understood what it meant, and yet I went on to passionately pursue all the things it railed against. Upgrading my car, finding the job that would give my life meaning, worked overtime to fill my wallet so that I can empty it on some cashier's counter to buy stuff to impress people to fill that void. Somehow, in the rapture of the desire to fit in, of feeling like I belong, I bought in. Let's not go crazy here. You won't find me wearing Birkenstocks and living off the grid. I'm not protesting the luxuries we can acquire. I'm only saying that I was not in any way in control. In fact, I'm trying to remember a time in my life where I really had everything under control, no loose ends. Weird. I have moments that I can remember of perceived control, but they were usually fleeting. And in their brief embrace, life was so sweet, so colorful. And I planned for it to remain that way. I've always gone into everything with the intent of it lasting forever. But today I know that neither my job nor the relationship I'm in are permanent, not the house I live in or the car I drive, and not even my goals. That doesn't mean I shouldn't take the very best care of them that I can. That just means I should lean into a philosophical practice of remaining unattached. Detached doesn't mean disengaging from life. It should remind us only to rely on our innate ability to create a world within us that will sustain the changes we will no doubt encounter as we move through this life. So stay light on your feet, and for fuck's sake, just be you. Just Be You podcast is written and produced by Rayanna Morrow and co-produced and edited by Dana Buckler of Hidden Productions in Ocala, Florida. You can always contact me with questions or comments at justbeyoupodcast@gmail.com. Links to all of our social media are available on this episode's show notes. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and or leave a review on whatever podcast platform you use to listen. Once again, thank you for listening to the Just Be You podcast.